This podcast is brought to you by Wealth Within, a global leader in stock market education. For more information on our courses, head over to wealthwithin.com.au. Please note that the information in this podcast should not be considered personal financial advice. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Talking Wealth podcast. I'm Phil and Pedro, and I want to start today off by asking a question. Now, what if I told you Michael Burry, who's a famous investor, told his investors to sell before a massive bull market? What if I told you George Soros lost $700 million betting against the bubble he was actually right about? What about Stanley Druckenmiller lost $3 billion after FOMOing into technology stocks? And Warren Buffett didn't buy Apple until 9 years after the iPhone came out. These aren't amateurs. They are considered some of the greatest investors who ever lived. Yet when you actually go back through their records, something really interesting happens. It's not just one bad prediction. Some of these investors have repeatedly predicted recessions that never arrived, sold stocks before enormous rallies, bought companies before they collapsed, or spent years betting against a market that just keeps rising. And I think this is something really encouraging for ordinary traders, or ones that think that they are ordinary, because maybe these guys that we hold on a pedestal don't have some magical ability that you or I don't have. Maybe successful investing was never about predicting the future in the first place. So today we're going to be asking, are billionaire investors really better than you? And could a disciplined retail trader actually have advantages that Wall Street doesn't? So I'm going to straight away go into a question, mate, to bring you in, Pedro.
How are you, mate? Yeah, doing well.
Awesome. Now, I want to ask, do you think people give someone like Buffett or Burry too much credibility simply because they got something spectacularly right in the past?
Absolutely. All the time. You know, you hear it all the time, where it's with The Big Short, with Michael Burry, or with Warren Buffett buying when there's blood in the streets, as he says, buy with value. And then, you know, it really puts people in a place where they're at a disadvantage. And when I mean retail traders, because that's really who we're talking about here. We're not talking about major funds. And I think if you're looking for the type of value that Warren Buffett is looking for, then you're going to be looking for a while. You're going to have a whole different strategy to him. If you're looking for that big short opportunity that Michael Burry, pointed out once and actually made a lot of money through that one trade, well then, you know, you're going to be waiting a long time as well. So it's a old adage that a broken clock is right at least once a day, and that's really what's happening here. Of course, people would look for answers elsewhere.
I think it goes back to even deeper into the question of there's this belief that people like these brilliant investors or professionals, they know something I don't. I mean, how many times have you seen this? You know, a trader, a retail trader who's unsuccessful, trying new indicators, new tools, and going far out, you know, this isn't working, that's not working. And then you see a professional like Michael Burry on TV or Warren Buffett with these amazing returns or whoever. And you come to the conclusion of, oh, well, he must know something I don't. He's got all this money. He's got inside information. Mm-hmm. And it's natural to think that way, because if someone's successful and you're not, you've got to go, well, what does he know that I don't? Or why is he successful and I'm not? But the reality is, as we go through this podcast, you'll see that these people, in terms of getting stock picks right, are no more successful than you or I. In fact, some of them are way worse. We have students, that just go and check out our testimonials, that these guys are 70, 80% right, trading, if not more.
Yep.
And, you know, I've had experiences like that for many years. And so when you look at some of these numbers, these high-end guys are sometimes only right 40% of the time. But it goes back to the question of, how important is it actually being right? Is the goal trying to be right? And you pose that on someone, And they go, well, what are you talking about? Well, of course, if I'm right, then that means I'm going to make money. I got the stock direction right. But is it really about that? Because at the end of the day, there is probabilities involved in this. You're not going to be right 100% of the time. But what if when you're right, you're thinking in terms of making a lot more money than you're wrong? That changes the whole dynamic. You don't care about being right so much. And so maybe that's where these legends became legends, not because they were right.
Yeah, yeah, it goes back to that probability theory. And I think that it's ingrained within us going through school, you know, marking things as right or wrong, or when you're at your workplace and you either do your job right or you do it wrong. With trading, it's a whole different game. It's really a probabilities game, and you could be wrong 60% of the time and you would still be profitable. So I totally agree. It's not about being wrong. It's about how you structure everything around it and how you're able to deal with those times of being wrong. Because what I'm seeing, and you know, throughout the show and the traders that we talk to, a lot of the time when people are wrong, they freeze in the headlights, or they don't want to lose the money, and suddenly they're down 50-60%. They can't admit that they actually are wrong. So and that's what would happen with these guys as well. They can come out and say something, then you take that as solid. And then you go out and you base your investment decisions. In the meantime, they've just uncovered, oh, no, I was actually wrong. Now they're changing their strategy. And then now suddenly You've based your strategy or whatever, your decisions, on what they've said.
Hey, podcasters, you're here for a reason: to become a more confident and profitable trader. And you can achieve this because it's all about having the right knowledge. We have a course that will suit you and improve the profits you take from the market. Curious to learn more? Head over to Wealth Within and check out our trading courses.
Well, yeah, and we're going to break through, 10 legends to show you how human they really are. I hope, if anything, this just shows you that you've got such an amazing opportunity to do amazing things in the stock market. You shouldn't look up to these people like they're gods, because they're not. You'll see now clearly that they're as human as you and I, and they make some mistakes. So this is going to be pretty cool. Probably a bit of a therapy session for some people listening to say, hang on, you know what? I'm not that bad. If these legends are managing billions of dollars are making the same mistakes I'm making, why can't I do better? Why can't I be as good as them? So I'll get into the first one, the most well-known, Mr. Michael Burry. You know, his reputation, The Big Short. Burry spotted the US housing subprime disaster. There's movies made about it. He made a massive call, and one trade, basically, he became a king, shorted everything. What happened? The market crashed, and he made a lot of money for his investors. But so now, because of one trade, every time he says sell, it's literally in the news. I mean, I don't know about you, man. I see it so many times. As soon as he says sell, it's front page of 9MSN and news.com and all the stuff that we follow. And I want to give you some times he said sell and he was wrong recently. Some pretty serious times. January 2023, he tweets in his usual fashion to sell. Not long after, he tweets again saying, I was wrong to say sell. The US equities from 2023 following went for a massive bull run. Now, Tesla. Burry took a large bearish option against Tesla in 2000 and 2021. Very wrong. He also bet against Cathie Wood's ARK Innovation ETF. Got that wrong. Scion, which was his fund, they put puts against both indices, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ in 2023, meaning he was betting on it to crash. So the question, did Burry become famous because he was consistently good at predicting crashes, or because he arguably made the greatest crash prediction of his generation? And the answer is the second. Every single crash prediction he's made following the GFC, he has got wrong. And yet you look at his fund Scion performance, he's making money. So it shows you that these people are human, and you can still be profitable by being wrong. And this is where money management comes in. You know, it's the problem isn't listening to Burry. The problem's allowing someone else's conviction to replace your own process. And this is the biggest thing retail traders need to get their head around. And I'm going to say you and I'm not going to say retail traders anymore because it's us. You need to get your head around, get your head out of this thinking that someone told you to sell or someone told you to buy at a party or my mate's mate knows the guy that knows the guy. How you can take away all the element of question marks is your process. Forget about following anyone else. I mean, we often say, you know, if you're someone who's constantly looking at the news, following a somebody, looking for the next hot tool or indicator that's going to save you, it doesn't exist. The people that come through us, it's very common that you won't hear them at a party talking about stocks. In fact, I'll constantly get asked, oh, what do you think about that? What do you think about this? I get asked all the time and I never have an answer because I know if I change my mind tomorrow, great, you're not going to be able to I'm not going to be able to relay it to you and that's going to be bad for you. But more importantly, I don't mean to be rude, but I don't give a shit about your opinion because I have my own process. I don't care about Michael Burry's opinion. I don't care about Warren Buffett's opinion. I have a process that I have back-tested, that I have thoroughly, rigorously stress-tested, and that is all I need. I'm the one pushing the button and buying and selling. Why do I need all this extra information destroying my mental clarity? And it's one of the biggest things I see when people come to us before they walk away. It's like, damn, I just was looking at so many things. I didn't know it could be this simple.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that does cloud your judgment. And I've heard students say that when they actually shut out all that news, they actually perform a lot better. And I think a good example with Michael Burry was that he actually started predicting the top of the market. See, he started uncovering all this in 2005. So for 3 years, basically, you know, that outlines this in the movie as well, because he had his investors calling him, what are you doing? You know, and that was like when the market was soaring and they're saying, mate, you're making us miss out on the best part of the run and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, no, I'm seeing cracks here, you know, and he did all the research and, you know, the housing market continued to grow. You know, 2006, 2007, and it was only 2008 that the bubble burst. So if you would have been following his advice, I mean, and he's managing a lot of money that takes a lot of time to move. You and I can move out of the market, you know, on the click of a dime. If we see the market turning, we're out. So we can actually afford to be in the market throughout that 2005 all the way up to that 2008 period. We wouldn't have had to have listened to him. We could have capitalized off that and then just got out on a simple trend line or whatever our strategy is. And that's the type of you know, thing that we're talking about here, guys, is that when you listen to all that, he was right. But when is that going to happen? And that's that whole broken clock thing. So yes, there's a market crash coming. There's a market crash. The main question is that when.
Yeah, but that's the most important thing. If you're able to work out and trade with the when first, you're able to ride ups and down moves, and crashes don't scare you. Booms don't excite you any more than just your following direction. You become numb. If it's going to go up longer or down longer, who cares? You're going to be riding that. That's the most important thing by thinking about when to get in. And so if this resonates with you or it's something that you're listening and you're saying, well, I'm not really thinking of it in that way. I really suggest, you know, there's answers for you. And I'm not trying to do a sales spin. You don't have to come to us. I really don't care. But if go out and learn how to do it properly, but you have to learn how to do it properly. And there's not too many places that do it properly. And so it's so important. You know,
I've heard of people going to ChatGPT and asking for trading advice, yeah, and that doesn't turn out very good.
Well, yeah. I mean, anyway, let's get on to the next one. Ray Dalio, which is, you know, the founder of Bridgewater. He's basically one of you know, everybody knows Ray Dalio, right? He's in the social media now. He's one of history's most famous macro investors. So what do I mean by macro? It means people who say they understand how the market works, basically. He literally teaches people how the economic machine works. He's put the whole economy into a machine of moving parts like a Swiss watch, and he believes he's connected all the pieces to know how an economy works perfectly, if you will, or what's coming and why something's happening. So if anybody should know what's going to be coming economically, it's Ray Dalio. Now, I'm going to give you some of his most recent or some of his calls that have happened over the last couple of years. So in 2018, Dalio put a very, very high probability on the US recession before the 2020 election. So there was no normal cyclical recession in 2018 or 2019. COVID eventually happened, which caused one in 2020, but that was not what he was saying. Completely unrelated to his economic machine, how it worked. He's also famous for saying or arguing cash is trash. So he continued arguing against cash as inflation accelerated. Then interest rates surged and cash suddenly started paying attractive yields. Eventually, after that happened, he said, I no longer think cash is trash. Now, this is someone who supposedly tells people about how the economy works. He's worked out all the pieces. Next, we've got to talk about his performance. So Bridgewater, they had this pure alpha portfolio, which experienced a long period where returns were massively lagging US equities. I think it was like 3%, his returns. Now, I know he's supposed to be diversified all weather. Still, I don't think if you're an investor, you're happy with 3% unless you're an ultra high net worth and you're not in the market. And then what are you even doing in the market for 3%? Go and put your money in the bank account. Why take the risk at all?
Plus you're paying them fees to manage that.
So now ask yourself, if the world's greatest macro organization can't consistently turn macro forecasts into superior returns, why does a retail investor think they need to predict GDP, inflation, and interest rates to trade successfully?
You don't need to
predict the Australian economy. You don't even have to predict where rates are going to go in 12 months. You let the market do it and follow. And I'm not going to talk about it, what we do anymore again, because I don't want this to sound like a sales thing, but follow the market, mate. It's so much easier.
Let the big boys do all the research, and then when they choose what to buy, you're going to see that on the chart. You're going to see the volume go up. You're going to see other types of patterns that we can identify. You're going to see that play out on the chart, and all you got to do is press the buy button when certain things happen, and then press the sell button when certain other things happen. It's that basic. You don't need to be an economist, and it's probably better that you're not, because then you're going to get overwhelmed.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Next is Stanley Druckenmiller. Now this guy, we've got to give him credit. He's a really good hedge fund manager. He performs, he does his thing. They call him one of the greatest macro traders ever. He's worked with Soros. He's got an amazing long-term record. But even somebody of his reputation, believe it or not, guys, fell into a FOMO, fear of missing out trade. Emotions got involved. So I just wanted to highlight how a legend, one of the best, can still fall susceptible to things that everyday traders like you and I do. So if you feel you have made these mistakes in the past, it's okay. The best do it and still do it. And I'll tell you what happened. During the dot-com boom, Druckenmiller recognized that technology was becoming crazy. He stayed away. Then obviously he watched everyone else cashing in on it. Eventually he couldn't take it anymore. So he reportedly put roughly $6 billion into tech stocks right at the peak of 2000.
Oof.
And 6 weeks later, $3 billion was gone.
Oh.
And after he admitted, he knew better. So does this sound like a billionaire genius, or exactly what happens to a retail trader who watches a stock go up for 6 months and finally can't take it anymore? Like, He's human. And, you know, other examples where he made a recession prediction. So just to show that, you know, these guys get it wrong too, made a recession prediction in September 2022. He said he'd be stunned if the US didn't have a recession in 2023. In 2023, he continued warning of a hard landing. There was no US recession. NVIDIA, he said the exact opposite. He correctly recognized AI, bought NVIDIA. The stock went up. He thought the valuation had gone too far. He sold it. And he later said it was a big mistake. So, you know, the takeaway here is one of the world's greatest traders managed to buy something too late because of FOMO, and decades later sell something too early because it looked expensive. So just shows you he's human. And this is why trading rules matter so much and why the chart matters so much, because the goal is to let your profits run and cut your losses short, right? Mm. How do you let that happen? You can only let that happen by following price. How do you follow price? By looking at a chart. How do you know when to buy and sell? By having rules for understanding what price is doing. Knowing the right time frame to watch price on. Because even 07, the GFC, it's so easy to see and catch the turn when the GFC starts by looking at a chart.
Yep.
1989, same thing. Every crash. The only one that was tricky was COVID, because it happened so quick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And even then, if you've got your stop losses in place for your stocks, that should take care of that. And then you just get back in where it's an opportune time. But this Druckenmiller, he's great, and he's no doubt that he's very profitable over time, and that he's he's made a lot of money for himself and investors. But again, if he's putting out stuff on the news, or I think also sometimes when you put stuff out in media, they require you to say certain things. They want a comment out of you, or you know, all of these people. Yeah,
I know that very well.
Yeah. You know that very well. So you have to kind of say something, what you're thinking at the time. Yes. Yeah, and controversial, and you're saying what you're thinking at the time, but it may not be necessarily the strategy that you're implementing for your own investors if you're running a fund and things like that. So I would not be taking what these guys are saying. I'd be taking it with a grain of salt, basically.
No, it's a good point, and it's true. Like, sometimes you need to be, or say something a bit more exaggerated than your actual thoughts to get exposure. And it's not always exactly what you're thinking. So yeah, you're right. I've experienced that, you know, plenty of times. But all right, so we get to Warren Buffett, the man, the best in the business. Now,
what did they call the prophet of Omaha, or no,
the oracle,
that's right.
Oracle of Omaha. Well, the Oracle, you know, I guess the question was, did Buffett, was it more that these guys were good risk managers and just kept staying in the game, surviving long enough to get the returns, or was it that they knew what was coming next? Now, if you ask that question to Buffett, was his success based on he knew what was coming next? I think it's fair, without taking away how great he was and how long he was successful, I think the answer is no. So Apple, the iPhone comes in 07. Berkshire begins buying Apple in 2016, 9 years later. At that time, Apple was already one of the world's largest companies. When Berkshire initially bought into Apple at that time, it came through its investment operation rather than Buffett discovering Apple before everyone did. And then Buffett dramatically increased their position. Apple became one of the greatest investments ever. So what does this teach us? It tells us Buffett, like, it's not that Buffett was stupid for being late, but Buffett was incredibly late and still made an extraordinary amount of money. So you don't need to buy the absolute bottom. That's another thing we always talk about when we're teaching people. It's trying to buy the absolute bottom or sell the absolute top is a sure way to get hurt in the market, because there's plenty of opportunity riding trends. And, some of his other stuff that in terms of Buffett, IBM, He built a huge position, eventually changed his view and exited. Airlines, he criticized the airlines for decades, changed his mind and bought them. TSMC, he built a multi-billion dollar stake and quickly reversed it, mostly due to the geopolitical. Google, he acknowledged that he missed buying Google despite Geico being a Google advertiser. Amazon, another massive business that Buffett admitted Berkshire missed. Dexter Shoes, Buffett himself has described this as one of his worst mistakes because Berkshire paid using Berkshire shares that later became enormously valuable. And then Apple again. There's don't quote me on this exactly, but there's a Morgan Stanley calculation where over 2004 to 2023, this Morgan Stanley research estimated roughly that Berkshire did 542% in terms of return. The S&P did 537%. But if you take away Apple, Berkshire only did 442. So was it performed less than the index? So how good was he without Apple? And that's the thing, you know, it's don't judge a trading strategy on the one trade. Like so many times you'll see a portfolio or trading strategy where the guy says they're good and he's probably got 10 trades, nine of them are losers, and there's one exorbitant winner. And you look at that on the numbers and the percentage return, you go, oh, it's not bad. Me personally, if I saw someone with half the return of that, but he had done 100 trades and 90 of them were right, that's a far more impressive return and performance. Because this guy has a repeatable edge in the market as opposed to the guy that's taken 10 hits and one home run and nine losers. He doesn't have edge. So I think it's, you know, it's important that, you know, traders can learn from this. Really thinking about what it is and how what's important when you're trading and doing things. But
absolutely. We keep talking about traders, and we need to establish as well that Warren Buffett is an investor at heart. So that's something that a lot of traders shouldn't take his strategy to their strategy, because he's very much long term, and he's thinking about buying the actual company, like as if you go to a shop or you go and buy a property, you're buying the bricks and mortar. He analyzes all of that. He loves to own those companies. A trader doesn't care what is underneath that price chart that you're looking at. You're just looking to make an arbitrage trade by buying low and selling high. Warren Buffett is not somebody that I would follow as from a trading perspective.
But here's a question. What if he actually did use his knowledge, and what if he actually did use technicals to get out?
If he incorporated
technicals to get out, to get really strong entry and exit points.
For sure.
How much better could that return have been?
Yep, a lot. I mean, we would have seen something like Renaissance, like we saw with that technical trade. If he was a mix of Renaissance where with his style. But it's an important distinction that definitely people should think about, because I don't think it's something that many people think. They think, oh, you know, the stock market, Warren Buffett, but you're not going to go in as a retail trader and have that same style.
Hey, podcasters, are you looking for a practical and easy way to profit consistently from the stock market so you take control of your investments? Get Dale's best-selling book, How to Beat the Managed Funds by 20% for free. Just pay shipping. It's packed with powerful, simple strategies that'll give you the confidence and know-how to beat the managed funds by 20%. Visit the shop on the Wealth Within website and secure your copy today.
All right, let's move on. We'll get to Bill Ackman. I know we don't have time, but we're running out of time. But Ackman, he's an excellent example, because he's made a few big mistakes. And this guy's, you know, come back from the dead with what he's done. But Herbalife, approximately bought 1 billion a bearish position. He argued Herbalife was worth zero. Eventually, he exited, the company went up. Another stock, Valeant. This was a bigger disaster. Ackman became one of Valeant's most vocal supporters, kept defending it as the business deteriorated. The estimated loss on this trade, and this is the thing that really hurt him, was around $4 billion. Cool. Netflix, in early 22, Netflix falls. Ackman sees opportunity. He buys about $1 billion. And this is another point of just buying low. It's one thing to say buy low, sell high, but it can be misinterpreted. The stocks can go way lower and you can end up in a situation like Valeant, because all these, Bill Ackman, I know, tries to find buy cheap. But you've got to really think about, you know, buying at the right time, not just buying low and cheap.
For sure. Lower. And, you know, thinking about that Herbalife, how he shorted it, eventually he was right, because Herbalife, I don't think it even exists anymore. Or if it does, it's, you know, a very small company. But his timing was wrong. And that's another thing. You know, you could be following him blindly. He's coming out saying he's shorting Herbalife and it's gone through the last bullish run and suddenly you're wiped out.
Yeah. I hope this, you know, this podcast just opens the eyes of how important timing is. It's something we place the most importance on.
Yeah.
You know, when we're trading, when we're teaching, it is crucial to not ending up in these situations where you could be right on your thesis, but never get to see it out because you've gone in too early, whilst the market's moving against you. And so Netflix was another one. He bought $1 billion. 3 months later, he sells at a loss of $400 million, which is almost a 50% stop loss, which is crazy. Again, where's your risk and money management? But
yeah.
Anyway, let's not go there. Then again, he buys it back in 2026. So if an investor like this, you know, with Perishing's, their hedge fund, with those kinds of analysts, information and resources can change their mind this dramatically, why are retail traders embarrassed about being wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Being wrong isn't the problem. Refusing to admit you're wrong is the problem. This is, being wrong is part of the business. Mm. You're going to be wrong. Get good at being wrong and cutting a losing trade.
Yep. Imagine if scientists were scared to be wrong. Would there be any discoveries?
No. And people who say, especially people with, you know, if there's an ego attached or there's this desire to be right, it will destroy your psychology as a trader.
Mm.
Get used to it, man. You're going to be wrong. Cut them. Let the winners run. Be profitable.
Yeah.
Accept losing is part of the game.
Yeah, exactly. You're uncovering what doesn't work, and that's already good data as it is. And that's basically what trading is. Your wins and losses, it's just data in your overall system. So treat it as that.
Yeah. I want to get into two more guys, because these guys, especially this one, Jeremy Grantham, is another older guy. And this is what is a perma bear, one of the greatest bubble historians. Look him up. He's got a massive reputation. And he has identified previous bubbles in the past. Now, the problem is Jeremy Grantham issued, and he was on that Diary of a CEO recently.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yes. I did see an old fella in that saying something about a crash. Is that him?
And he got him. The guy from Diary says, well, hang on a second. I mean, he brought up exactly what I'm going to bring up. So Grantham issued repeated warnings about US stocks for much of the post-GFC bull market. He warned in about 2010 that a major decline was going to happen. 2010, stocks kept rising. In 2022, he calls the US market the fourth super bubble of the previous 100 years. Now, 2022 was bad. The Nasdaq fell. But he subsequently warned that the recovery was essentially another stage before the final act of the super bubble. Now, the US markets are where they are now. And so, if someone tells me the market is in a bubble but can't tell me whether the bubble is going to burst next month or in 5 years from now, what do I actually do with the information?
Yeah, exactly.
And what, like, really, what do you do? Analysis isn't a trading signal. And that's the problem with these perma bears. They're so locked into being bears. I even know I even know people that are running funds right now that have this mindset that are perma bears. And I think to myself, mate, the clients are the ones that are suffering. Your job is not to guess. Your job is to make money from what the market presents. Your clients are missing out because you have this view the market's not going higher and you've just completely destroyed their retirement savings because of your locked, fixed view on the market, which, like this Jeremy Grantham was wrong. And I remember that Diary of the CEO goes to him, well, mate, what do you have to say for yourself? Like, your clients have missed out on a lot of upside. And he's like, yeah, that's okay, but when it comes back, it'll even itself out. And it's like, yeah, but what, 20 years of missed opportunities?
Yeah.
That's okay for you? What, because you get your management fee, it's okay, yeah?
Exactly.
That's why it's okay for you. It's not okay for the guy that's invested with you.
Yeah, the guy that's about to retire and, you know, he's just missed out on 10 years of growth and he's basically ended up with nothing now.
Yeah.
No good.
No.
Yeah. There's a few perma bears out there. When when you say perma bears, you're saying permanent bears. It's people that just keep singing out loud. And I think an honorable mention should be, even though I respect the guy and I read his book, Robert Kiyosaki, I think that his book was great. But lately, I don't know, in the last, say, 5 years, he's been very bearish and speaking very negative about a lot of things. So it begs the question, well, what are you investing in then? You know, what are you positive in? And well, he's pumping Bitcoin. Yeah, he was pumping Bitcoin for a while and then he wasn't. So it's like you can't follow these people. You really can't.
And then the last one, Peter Lynch, we'll finish off on him. Because Lynch, who is he? He's one of the greatest fund managers ever. Magellan, if you know Magellan.
Yep.
They've delivered good returns, but he openly admits he's missed some incredible companies. So Apple, he understood the product. He had firsthand exposure to the iPod. Still, he didn't buy the stock properly. Later, he said, how dumb was I? Nvidia, he acknowledged that he missed Nvidia as well. And yet, Peter Lynch is still Peter Lynch, which means you can miss incredible trades and still be an incredible investor. So this is really important psychologically because I know, you know, a lot of people beat themselves up and say, oh, I missed that. I sold that too soon. I got it wrong. I'm bad at this because of that. But the best investors do the same thing. It's not a perfect science. So if you're beating yourself up over it, it's not the way to go about it because they also make mistakes. I think if you fall into that trap and you realize I'm leaving profit on the table, I'm cutting things too soon, and you're not learning from that, you're not finding ways to adjust so it doesn't happen again. And that's the beautiful thing about having knowledge and a skill set and being able to read a chart. You can actually take a lesson, sit down like a scientist, work out what went wrong, work out how you can make that never happen again, and tighten your strategy. But just know that even the best make these mistakes. So I think, we'll just let's leave it on that and say, you know, what's really important is before you enter a trade is not what you think about the economy or even the best guy that how it teaches us about an economic machine doesn't totally understand it or gets it wrong. It's you should really think about why am I buying it? Where am I buying it? What's my risk? What's my opportunity? Where do I get out if I'm wrong? How do I stay in long enough to catch the most the meaningful part of the trend? And how do I repeat that again in a process? Because if I don't have a process to repeat that again, you might as well just go to the casino, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You don't want to be a one-hit wonder.
Not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. And a lot of people were during COVID and actually a lot of people that came to us as students, which is great that they did. I'm so happy. And it's actually one of our best students have been from that. They bought during that, they obviously they identified that the market was sold off too heavily. They said, something doesn't seem right here, right? So they bought at that bottom. They made a lot of money through COVID. But then the 2021 peak hit and they weren't able to hold on to that money. So then, of course, they thought, well, they got a taste of the market. They said, oh, you know, I actually can make money in the market, but I wasn't able to hold it. I'm going to need to know what I'm doing, which, you know, hats off to them, because that's exactly what you should be thinking. So they actually went from one hit wonders, being able to make money just off one event that may not come for a very long time, to now learning how to trade. And now they're making money out of the natural volatility of stocks. And that's really what you need to be doing, is being able to play in any market. And that's how you're going to have success as a trader.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. All right, mate. Well, thank you very much for joining. This was hopefully it just shows you that, hey, everybody's human. Everybody's got a shot at it, and all the best. Yeah.
Yep. Even the gods bleed, right?
That's right. There. Well said. All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in on this one. I hope you got some good stuff out of it. Please, if you could give us a 5-star review, it really helps us continue our channel and get our message out. Thank you for your support. Thank you for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye for now.
This podcast is brought to you by Wealth Within, a global leader in stock market education. For more information on our courses, head over to wealthwithin.com.au. Please note that the information in this podcast should not be considered personal financial advice.